brought to you by RadioWerewolf.com. It's time to talk about the elephant in the room. I'm sure a lot of you watched the Grand Old Party's fifth debate held in Las Vegas. And yes, it's still very much about Trump. He continues to completely dominate the polls. Love him, hate him. He's the man who is the face of the 2016 Republican primary. All the other candidates are in his shadow and hope for a fraction of his attention. But is it really about whether or not the Donald, who's now pledged his loyalty to the Republican Party, eventually gets the nomination or not? Or is it about the man who sponsored the debate itself and who has literally sponsored the entire primary? I'm talking about billionaire Sheldon Adelson, who's admittedly poured at least $90 million into the various candidates of this GOP race and who has met with basically every single candidate. He's said to favor Marco Rubio, you know, one of the fakest and most wishy-washy candidates ever, not the point, but he's had everyone from Ben Carson and even Rand Paul meet with him and let him know where they stand on the issues that are most important to him. The day before the debate, Trump met with Adelson at his hotel where the debate was being held, and he says he doesn't want his money. He's already a billionaire. He and his small dollar donors, they're paying for this campaign. He doesn't want to be bought out. But it goes without saying that there's probably some kind of understanding. But what does that mean for the man who's been portrayed as the godfather, who's going to buy the presidency, who arguably has more influence over this race than even the Koch brothers, the other billionaires buying it? How important is it that billionaires are buying our presidencies now? Well, it's very important when you think about the fact that Sheldon Adelson isn't loyal to the United States. His first loyalty is to a different country. And you've got virtually every Republican candidate sucking up to Sheldon Adelson. And behind closed doors, they're kissing his ass. And on the stage, they're vying for the spotlight.
Defense Authorization Act, which is a bill that funds the troops. It also, by the way, funds the Iron Dome.
Even the debate's moderator, Wolf Blitzer, who's hosted many debates and is, you know, the key man for the CNN network. But a lot of people don't know that his career started working for the media in Israel. And when he came over to the United States, he did his work on behalf of AIPAC. He edited their newsletter, and he was one of the top AIPAC lobbyists in all of Washington. And only later did he become one of America's most beloved journalists and misleaders. Okay, that's the kind of debate we had in Las Vegas. And while we're focusing on he said, she said, what the different candidates said, how they reacted, how Trump handled the attack from Bush, and how meaningless Bush's candidacy, there's still the elephant in the room, the man who is influencing the entire race. What does it really mean when the billionaire who's bought the presidential race is loyal to a different country that just so happens to be in the region where they're debating how big of a bigger war to have in Syria, what to do with ISIS, and whether or not they're going to, well, literally remap the Middle East and turn Syria in Iraq into a Sunni state, whether or not they're going to create a Kurdistan, and how big of a role Turkey and Saudi Arabia and a certain other country that seemingly can never be mentioned or put into context thinks about all of it. What do you really think is going on? Is it about these people and what they said, or is it about this man and what his priorities are?
You'll have plenty of opportunity.
Is Iran
an ally of Iran?
Iran.
ISIS is created and formed because of the abuse that Assad and his Iranian sponsors.
But this is what's important to do.
We need to focus our attention on Iran.
How long until we see Iran nuked?
We do have a story that just broke on Bloomberg News just before we came on here.
And exclusively.
This is quite a story. We've heard about Martin Shkreli a fair amount because he's been jacking up the price of those pharmaceuticals and also paying millions for that Wu-Tang Clan.
I'm going to point out, our show has been waiting for a week and a half to hear David Weston say Wu-Tang. If he says ODB, I'm going to fall down.
But this is a very different story, a really important story about Mr. Shkreli. And for that, we're going to go to Carrie Geyer, who did break the story. Carrie?
Hi, good morning, David. So very interesting, exciting news in the world of pharmaceuticals. And of course, Martin Shkreli, who's been dubbed by the media as the, the bad boy of the pharmacy industry, he was arrested today on suspicion of securities fraud. And it's not related to what he's really been criticized for over the last several weeks, which is hiking up the price of life-saving drugs through his company, Turing Pharmaceutical. But it's actually transactions and payments that he made using money from a previous firm that he founded called Retrophin. So he basically is accused of taking money and stock from Retrophin and using it to pay off unrelated personal and business debts.
Carrie, would he ever have been caught or even looked at had he not been in the news, dubbed the bad boy?
Well, I think that's an interesting question. I think that obviously this case would not be such a big deal if it didn't have such a huge public profile. But interestingly enough, the company which he's accused of taking money for, which he founded in 2011, Retrophin, actually sued him in August for many of these same issues that federal prosecutors are now looking at him for. So it has been laid out in a civil lawsuit, and federal prosecutors basically took a really close look at those allegations, and they might have even started looking before that. And this is just straight up securities fraud, basically taking money from one pot to pay off people that he owed money to. And according to both the lawsuit and how these charges are going to roll out, he did not have the company's permission to do that.
Carrie, this is quite a story. Our own Carrie Geiger breaking this. He's a punk, not necessarily the bad boy of the hedge fund industry. At this point, I think it's kind of safe to say the punk.
In Illinois, a professor at an evangelical college has been suspended for quoting Pope Francis as saying Christians and Muslims share the same God. She's seen here in another show of support for Muslims wearing a traditional head covering. Her suspension has stirred debate on the campus of the Wheaton College.
We're here to stand in solidarity with her because she's shown so much love and support, not only to us, but to others in our communities, in our broader city and area. And so we're here to do just that, to show our love and support for her.
This is not anything against Muslims. This is just simply saying that we do not worship the same God as Muslims. So the fact that she went on Facebook on behalf of the college and represented the student body and the staff and said that this is what we believe, that's wrong. And I think there should be consequences.
The school says the professor's statement muddles the differences between the two religions. Officials say the suspension had nothing to do with the with her wearing the Muslim head covering.
You know, one thing where I see another overlap between sort of LGBT issue and the refugee issue is the speed that societies are allowed for adaptation and transition. Because I think what was the problem with LGBT in Russia is that, you know, Europe just rediscovered it for itself and it tried to impose it on Russia, which wasn't ready for that at that point. And the same with refugees. It's just many societies, they may be tolerant, but they're just having difficulties with the sudden nature of the refugee influx. Do you think we need perhaps to change the way we approach not so much the values themselves as much as the advocacy of those values, allowing societies to come to terms with them, to incorporate them, rather than, you know, with, you know, the EU standing there in at the center of Europe and telling every country that you have to do this and you have to do that?
But the question is, so we are now confronting the security and liberty.
Yes.
And we will have to find a new compromise between liberty and security. And it is impossible to say I do prefer liberty and security is not important for us, for me, and vice versa, it is the same. So what is very important for Europe? To be still an open and democratic society. But some rules will be maybe more strict in Europe. And I'm repeating again that the way is to limit some liberties, because that's the question of our security.
Tensions run high as people are fired up about the future of four controversial Confederate monuments across the Crescent City.
The statues at the center of this fiery debate are the Robert E. Lee statue at Lee Circle, the Jefferson Davis Monument in Mid-City, the PGT Beauregard statue leading into City Park, and the Battle of Liberty Place Monument.
And this whole debate started last summer when Mayor Mitch Landrieu considered the Confederate monuments public nuisances and said they should be taken down.
It's a position that's kind of driven a wedge through communities in New Orleans, even among some city leaders.
WDSU reporter Kelsey Davis joins us live now from City Hall, where NLPD will have an increased presence at council chambers. Good morning, Kelsey.
Good morning, Charles. That's right. As you guys mentioned, you just saw how crazy it got inside council chambers last week. And of course, there were protesters outside. The same expected today. So NOPD has confirmed they will have additional security both inside and outside of City Council, City Hall, rather, as this whole debate continues and the vote, which is expected later on today, comes down. Now, before that vote happens at 10 o'clock or later on this morning, there will be another moment or chance for the public to weigh in on this issue. There's going to be a whole entire hour for people to weigh in on the situation, but there are some strict rules to make sure that this moves along in a fair and efficient manner. There will be 30 minutes allowed for each side of this argument in total. Each speaker will have 2 minutes to comment. We're told that speakers will alternate for and against the issue, going back and forth for that entire hour period. An order will be determined by time on stamp cards that you'll stamp once you first get into City Council chambers earlier this morning. And lastly, if you spoke during the last council meeting when they allowed for public comment, City Council or City Hall, city officials rather, are urging you to refrain from speaking today. They want to give other people a chance to weigh in on this issue who did not speak on this issue last time. Now, again, many people have a lot of concerns either way this vote goes today. Some people are worried that taking down these statues is an attack on the city's culture.
They're an inanimate object. They are not an object that is carrying forward the hatred and the racism and the oppression of our opponents here. The idea is that New Orleans is a historic city. If you tear down history, you might as well tear down New Orleans.
And while there's lots of people who agree with that man, there are lots of other people who agree with Mayor Landrieu and say that it's time for these monuments to come down.
New Orleans imprisons more people than anybody globally. Where do you think that pattern comes from? There's an ideology behind it. Robert E. Lee stands there as symbolic of that ideology. The man who told us that slavery was good for us because it civilized the African.
Again, that meeting set to start at 10 o'clock this morning. Expect added security, and because this is such a controversial issue, expect a packed house as well. It's recommended that you get here early to make sure you get a seat, and especially if you want to get on the list to be a part of the public hearing process. Reporting outside City Hall, Kelsey Davis, WDSU News.
Well, surfing the web, and I come across this nice little gem. The link will be in the description. The CEO of Sam's Club, you know, the wholesale shopping thing that was owned by Walmart. Actually, it still is owned by Walmart, but ran by somebody else. Right? The article nudging is going to the fact that the CEO is nudging her suppliers. Right, yes, the CEO for Sam's Club is a female, no big deal. Black female, once again, no big deal, right? However, she's influencing her partners and her suppliers and stuff, right, to push the affirmative action agenda. Now, if you don't know what that is, the affirmative action is to hire more of a group that could be that is being quote unquote oppressed. So more African Americans, more Orientals, more Pacificers, more Asians, more. To put it in a sense, it's people who are not white and are not male. The link is in the description. There's also a video right over there that, you know, she was kind of hush-hush when she met with the suppliers, because the suppliers on the other side of the table were all white males. And then she goes, I'm going to make a phone call to them and talk about it. This right over here is bothering me because if the suppliers, right, are all white, she'll probably try and use bully tactics going, fix it, use affirmative action, or else I will not do business with you. And that right there in itself is wrong. And to bring up the point, you know, reverse racism doesn't exist. I think it's a stupid term, because either you're racist or you're not. Not reverse racist to what these people are saying. SJ types are saying reverse racism is a class of people is being racist to another class of people because that class of people is being racist to them. No, that's not how it works nowadays. And it never worked that way. You're either racist or you're not. You're either sexist or you're not. So, I stopped going to Sam's Club a long time ago because I thought Costco was better. I actually think BJ's is better as far as wholesale goes. You sick people who think I said BJ meaning something else, there's something up with you. Get your mind out of the gutter for once. So I will not be getting a membership at Sam's Club. You will not see me at Sam's Club. And I tend not to go to Sam's Club, even if someone who I'm accompanying and I'm driving to, or someone who needs help, needs to go to Sam's Club. They're going to have to go somewhere else. Yes, that's kind of an asshole move, but hey, I don't want to work with a company I don't want to shop at a company that's like that. If you have any comments, questions, or any of that, go in the comment section, leave a comment, and I'll get back with you. If you troll, I'm just going to delete it because you only get one. Have a nice night.
Hey guys, this is Spiro. I just want to do a Fukushima update here. We haven't talked about this in a while. This is a disaster that is still ongoing till this day. This disaster initially took place on March 11th, 2011. There was a massive earthquake that triggered a tsunami, both crippling the nuclear power plant, the Daiichi nuclear power plant there in Fukushima. As you can see here, this is part of a declassified report from the U.S. government that was put together on March 18th, 2011. Now, they stated they knew just days after this event that 25% of the total fuel in Unit 2 was released into the atmosphere, that 50% of the total spent fuel from Unit 3 was released into the atmosphere, and 100% of the total spent fuel from Unit number 4 was released into the atmosphere. Now, they did not come out and state this. They did not tell the public this. They just now released this declassified report, you know, years later, as the cover-ups and downplaying continues. Now, of course, they go on to state here that the West Coast, Hawaii, and Alaska are well below the 1 REM total effective dose per the Protection Action Guide. All except for Alaska, thyroid dose estimates are well below the EPA 5 REM Protective Action Guide. They stated that there was no need to consider intervention actions like distribution of potassium iodide, removing dairy cows from contaminated pastures, or interdicting milk or leafy vegetables contaminated with I-131. More information has come out in the past week about sharp increases of radiation levels spike 400,000%, almost 1 billion becquerels per cubic meter of radiation. They're stating that high levels of radioactivity have been discovered in the underground tunnels, and they've sharply risen. Now, when they compare these current levels to the levels that they monitored last year, they've risen 4,000 times. That's 4,000 times higher than of December of last year. Also, the samples contained 500,000 becquerels of a beta ray emitting substance, up to 4,100 times from the same period. So they state that they're investigating why, they don't know why all of a sudden these major increases of radiation there at Fukushima. But nonetheless, this is still an ongoing crisis here. This is a huge threat to people, to the oceans, the planet, in my opinion. This is a huge disaster that's being covered up, ignored, and not talked about. So they're just now deciding to release declassified reports that they knew that, you know, all of that radiation was just spewing into the atmosphere. 100% of the spent fuel was launched into the atmosphere from unit number 4, and they just quietly release it, you know, 4.5 years later. You can always find Dabu 7 and myself over here every Friday night at Dabu 777 for Real Talk Live. We do a 1 hour live show, minimum 1 hour, every Friday night, typically at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. This week, we're going to be bumping that up to 5 p.m. Eastern. So in about an hour from when I'm going to put this video out, we'll be live on the air discussing all the events that took place this week and much more. Till then, this is Spiro. Much love.
Australian researchers have found the closest potentially habitable planet beyond our solar system to date. Three planets orbit a red dwarf star called Wolf 1061. That's only 14 light years away from Earth. But only one, Wolf 1061c, falls within what's known as the Goldilocks zone, not too close or too far away from its star to allow for water and potentially life as we know it. Wolf 1061c is roughly 4 times bigger than Earth and takes 18 days to revolve around its star, which is much cooler than our sun. It joins the ranks of over 1,000 potentially habitable planets, but many of those are hundreds of light years from Earth. The researchers think they'll be able to study 1061c in more detail because it is so close. If it passes across the face of its star, the researchers can test the planet's atmosphere to see if it can truly sustain life. Bernuzzi, I'm Ryan Beek.
Well, U.S. lawmakers have voted unanimously to impose new sanctions on banks that knowingly do business with the Lebanese resistance movement, Hezbollah. The bill against Hezbollah was passed by the U.S. Senate last month. Now, it is expected to go to the White House for President Barack Obama's signature. Legislation also targets Hezbollah's television channel, Al-Manar, by aiming to cut the broadcast of satellite operators that air the channel's programs. It also requires the White House to present to Congress a series of reports on Hezbollah operations in the world. Back in July, the U.S. government imposed sanctions on 3 Hezbollah leaders, saying they were key players in the movement's operations in Syria. Hezbollah is fighting Daesh, Takfiri terrorists in Syria. To discuss that further, we're now joined by Dr. Kevin Barrett, who is an author and Middle East expert, and he's joining us live now from Madison. Now, Dr. Barrett, it seems that the U.S. obsession with Hezbollah continues. What do you put it down to in this specific case? Is it about Syria?
It's ironic that we're getting all this propaganda here in the United States that Daesh represents Muslims and therefore it's radical Islam and it poses a mortal threat to the whole world and to people in the United States. We're hearing Daesh being blamed for the San Bernardino false flag massacre, which was actually carried out by Kraft International or related paramilitaries working with the deep state. But in fact, they're not really interested in fighting Daesh. Hezbollah is on the ground fighting Daesh and having some success. And apparently for that reason, it's being targeted. The United States has a two-pronged policy here. On the one hand, it holds Daesh up as a sort of enemy image to rally the people against this scary Islamic threat, supposedly Islamic. And on the other hand, they're pumping up Daesh and actually working against people like Hezbollah who are doing the brunt of the fighting against Daesh. So it's absolutely disgusting, the hypocrisy that rules politics here in the United States, and particularly the Zionist death grip on the political system. People like Sheldon Adelson, the biggest gangster in America, the heir to Meyer Lansky, a thug, a gangster, a man who makes his living through the most debauched kinds of activities, has racked up billions and billions of dollars, which he's now distributing like a gangster godfather to his political thugs who are ranting and raving against Islam on the one hand, and then essentially supporting Daesh and opposing the enemies of Daesh, such as Hezbollah, on the other. The hypocrisy here is just staggering, and I'm still waiting for the day that enough Americans wake up that we're going to have a revolution in this country as soon as they realize what's really going on.
Okay, we'll leave it there at that note. But as always, Dr. Brett, we of course appreciate your insight. That was Dr. Kevin Brett, who'd be speaking to us live from Madison.
Many people have asked me over the last, you know, several weeks or so, essentially, what are the kind of things I would like to see done? You know, where would I like to go with things? Well, here's reality. One, let's just start right at the top. Multicult, it's a failure. Multicultural societies, multi-ethnic societies, multilingual societies, polyglot empires, all of it, they're garbage. They fall apart. They have no center of stability. They are artificial. And frankly, they can only be held together by increasing amounts of violence by the usually a very small minority who profit off of the empire or polyglot, a horde. Okay, in that sense, they're very, very, very like an actual nomad horde in that they're only held together by mutual advantage and by the most flimsy of ideological propositions as such. They have no organic soundness that holds them together, no biological fundamental reality, and as such, they crumble, and they destroy the people within them. This is reality. Find me a Roman. The people in Rome today aren't Romans. It's a joke. Now, I don't intend to be, for my people, but all of the Western European peoples, to be the Romans of history, and therefore multicult must go. That's one thing I would do. That's all multiculture. There's no reason for anyone who isn't a European Christian Gentile, or at least a European who can accommodate themselves to a European Christian Gentile culture. If you cannot, you'll simply be asked to leave. If you try to take over from us, we will crucify you. You can see that I'm not weak. Christ didn't weaken my moral fiber in the least way, right? So there's that. Two, what would we do from here? Well, from there would be structural changes. The biggest one right off the top would be there would be a massive campaign to basically educate people on the fact that currency, money, is a symbol for the things that can be bought and sold in society. It's just a symbol. And those things, the goods and services, come basically from here and here, from humans, from our work, you know. And therefore, really, it's those of us that work and do productive and good things that help others get the things they need to live that are making money. In the most real sense, we are literally a money tree, or the very fountain of money, if you'd like. Rumpelstiltskin himself, you know. And through this, the basic idea would be to show people in a slow, calm manner that this usury-based system we have is simply unnecessary. Now, the reason that this would be done in a slow manner is so there would be no crazy reactions, no spooking of people, you know. It wouldn't be like we're just sacking the money out and replacing new money, which would cause a massive amount of chaos. It could be a structured changeover, which would be calm and rational. That's at least the ideal of it. It's certainly a lot better than just rushing on in and abolishing the Fed all in 15 minutes, you know, because... Okay, let's just say that somebody did do that, abolished the Federal Reserve, but left the big banks in place that really are the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve is just a consortium. It's just a front for those big banks, see? Well, those big banks would just start to issue loans that amount to the same carpetbagger debt as what the Federal Reserve does, except for they wouldn't be bound by the Federal Reserve Act, and so they would go for broke and then try to really rape us, and then they would go for the deflationary spiral to really set it to us like Weimar Germany. That's what would happen. So if you abolish the central banking function, you have to grab the other bankers quick by the scruff and stop them. And the key to stopping them is, in my view, I would promote a credit union system so that people who did work and own businesses and saved could pool that money together and have their own capital, you know, creation, basic engine, rather than these usurers' banks, which don't bank anything any longer. They simply create imaginary numbers from thin air. Well, if that's all that's going to be done, I don't see why we should pay them all of this interest money for it when a computer in the Treasury could do the exact same thing for free for the power of running the electricity, you see. From there, essentially, once the money was well in check and people, you know, this so-called market on Wall Street, the internationalist traitors, and I do mean traitors as in, you know, treason. That's the name of that street. Treason Street would simply be basically not completely arrested, but most of the largest people who were involved in the SNL scandal, Enron, and the rest would be outright brought to trial, found guilty, and hung. It's as simple as that. It's easy like that. All the bureaucrats and governmental officials that covered for them would be hung. And this goes right up to the bankers' debacle, where they swindled trillions from everyone. Now, so far we have the multi-cult would be gone, political correctness would be gone, the money that paid for all of it would be gone, the Wall Street treason lobby that ensured that all of it, that was basically the engine of it all, would be gone. Next would be the turn for the bureaucrats, the academia, and the professionals who are in league with the enemy and who are internationalist communist traitors. They would be purged, and I do mean purged outright, relieved of their jobs, taken from any positions of authority, and if need be, confined, interned. It's as simple as that. They would then be subjected to psychological pressures to force them to be loyal or break them and force them to outright come into open treason so they could be destroyed. It's as simple as that. And let me see. Now we have. Oh, now comes the next one I would do. This is kind of sort of remedial at this point, but now that we have the schools and the academics in line, we could actually institute a pro-nationalist educational system that would teach children to be proud of who they were, to be proud of their history, and would educate them better in the basic understanding of the universe around them, because it wouldn't teach them silly lies as though people with 120 IQs in first world countries are equal to 60 IQ savages in third world countries. That is a patent lie, and it is harmful to these children's soul to have to take in this garbage, frankly. Among other things, we would bring back the very concept of winners and losers, you know, okay? And frankly, the children that could not be winners as such would be directed towards jobs, middle class and working class jobs, with a massive jobs training program that would be part of school. The others would be taught to be administrators and directors as they were fit, just like nature had intended them to be. It simply would be an acceptance of the fact that nature has created working class, middle class, and upper class people in your abilities. And that's it, you know. Now, it isn't to say just because you were born upper class that you have those skills. No, this is, I would have it based purely upon merit, not your mommy and daddy's money. They wouldn't be able to buy you any position if they tried. We'd have them arrested for bribery and fraud and trying to effectively deceive the people by fobbing off poor leaders upon them. You see, we have this crop of poor leaders now because we've allowed money to elevate people who have no moral or personal characteristics fit for leadership. Okay? That's why we're up to our neck in this mess, because none of these people lead anything. They're simply a bunch of opportunists and trash. Okay? The media are garbage. The very fact is that they're anti-national and they hate us, and so there is again. Once the academics were in line, well, I mean, why not get rid of the media too and replace it with one that is loyal? You can publish anything that's true, but you have to be loyal to us when you do it. It's real simple. You don't get to promote multiculture. You don't get to promote anybody's well-being but ours. And you don't get to browbeat us into accepting our own doom through diversity and mass immigration and tolerance. You don't get to promote degeneracy. You don't get to promote all of this sick, disgusting, lowly, vile nonsense that the media tries to promote so that it can pollute and corrupt our people's healthy instinct to life. You just don't get to do it. And let me see from there. Oh, I'm going to be blunt with you. I would restrict the voting franchise. Women and children would not vote. No one under 35 would vote. Only men that had property, paid taxes, and held a rifle would vote. It's just that simple. It's that easy. You don't fight, you don't pay, you don't say. Just like that. And again, from these men who did this, people with merit, with the skills for leadership, would be promoted up by the other men to this ranks appropriate to them. It's not particularly difficult. And frankly, I mean, the Celts were doing the same basic concept, say, 4,000 years ago. It's pretty simple, Simon, you know. It's generally the cheapest form of government, since there would be no bribery in this. Anyone who bribed anyone would, again, snap by the neck. That easy. No games. No bribery. No public corruption. No any at all corruption of the youth or corruption of public morals. Anyone that moves against public morals or the morality of the youth is a public enemy, as far as I'm concerned. I would have a law passed. And, of course, public enemy would mean that anyone would be able to kill you in any way they were able, and they would be rewarded for it. They would be considered a hero who had saved the people from corruption, not a criminal. No crime would attach to stopping these sorts. Just like there would be no right to be, you know, subversive. No sane people allow subversives to operate against them openly. That's ignorance. It's stupid. It's weakness, in fact. It's the reason that we're here in this multicult cesspit today. That's why. Yeah. And a lot of that has to do with allowing anyone who can breathe oxygen to vote. It's just simply corrupted our political system. I'm sorry. You know. There it is. Okay, now that's what I'd like to see changed. And I'm saying this not so much as just as a hope, as a prayer, really. It's sort of a God may hear my cry and cause it to become so. Because, frankly, you know, everything I've said is what I would like. I'd like to see multicult go away. I'd like to see this media that's treasonous to us be put in check, and our academics who are treasonous be put in check, and in a more community and family-based society where we understand our biological bonds. And all right, folks, y'all take care now.
Good morning. I'm still reporting from Washington. Yesterday, another 2,000-page bill going through Congress was finally released to the public at 2 a.m. And guess when it is to be voted on? According to WorldNet Daily, the vote is tonight, Thursday night, December 17th. According to WorldNet Daily writer Leo Homan, who cites anonymous congressional sources, the new 2,000-pager, which almost no one will have time to read, is called the Omnibus Spending Bill. Inserted into the bill at the last minute was a secret deal to quadruple the number of controversial H-2B visas. These visas bring in unskilled workers to take away good jobs for American middle-class workers. Who benefits? The Rich Guys Club. The bill was sponsored by a strange combination of outgoing Democrat Senator Barbara Mikulski of Maryland and Tom Tillis, a Republican from North Carolina, and, of course, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. It will allow 250,000 foreign workers into the U.S. each year to work in construction, farming, hotel services, trucking, food processing, etc. According to the WorldNet Daily article, the bill also includes funding for all of President Obama's foreign refugee resettlement program. This program will cost $1.6 billion and bring in another 85,000 refugees this year, many of them from jihadist hotbeds like Syria, Somalia, Iraq, and Afghanistan. This flies in the face of a new Pew Research poll, which shows that 83% of voters want immigration levels frozen. According to the Economic Policy Institute, there are currently 6 unemployed construction workers for each job opening. In a letter to the chairs of the Senate Appropriations Committee, the Senate's voice of truth, Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama, ripped the measure. At a time when the civilian labor force participation rate in the U.S. is approximately 62.4%, now is not the time to advance legislation further depressing wages and employment for U.S. workers. In a statement released yesterday, Senator Sessions said that the omnibus bill, scheduled to be voted on tonight, approves without conditions the president's request for increased refugee admissions, allowing him to bring in as many refugees as he wants from anywhere he wants, and then allow them to access unlimited amounts of welfare and entitlements at taxpayer expense. This will ensure that at least 170,000 green card refugees and asylum approvals are issued to migrants from Muslim countries over the next 12 months. I'm still reporting from Washington.
President Obama's National Security Reassurance Tour took him to Virginia today and a briefing from counterterrorism officials. He then extolled Americans to stay alert and not to change their holiday plans and not to let the terrorists win. But despite this meeting and one at the Pentagon earlier in the week, the president still has no new answers for the growing fear in this country over ISIS terrorism and its potential to strike the homeland. Correspondent Kevin Cork leads off tonight from the White House.
From the Oval Office to the Pentagon to the National Counterterrorism Center. Different venues, but essentially the same message from President Obama. The effort to keep the country safe from terror continues round the clock.
Across our government, these dedicated professionals, including here at NCTC, are relentless. 24 hours a day, 365 days a year.
The remarks following a comprehensive security review of U.S. efforts to protect the homeland.
We are in a new phase of terrorism, including lone actors and small groups of terrorists like those in San Bernardino. Just as the threat evolves, so do we.
That evolution includes going after terrorists overseas, preventing them from getting into the U.S. in the first place, and working to prevent attacks here at home. Of little comfort for a jittery public, says Illinois Congressman Adam Kinzinger.
Unfortunately, the administration, they may be doing some things, but they have not given the American people the confidence that they're doing everything to keep us safe.
On the subject of the terror war, Russian President Vladimir Putin surprised many today when he suggested that the U.S. and Russia have actually narrowed their differences on Syria, sharing the same view of how to settle the conflict. But he rejected the notion of U.S. intervention in Syrian politics.
We will never agree with the idea of a third party, whoever it is, imposing its opinion about who governs who. This is beyond any common sense and international law.
Meanwhile, on the sidelines at the United Nations Security Council, Treasury Secretary Jack Lew met with other world finance ministers looking for ways to disrupt terror network cash flows. This as the administration continues to grapple with what to do with the remaining detainees at Guantanamo Bay Prison, 48 of whom have now been cleared for immediate transfer.
We're under some limitations about what can be said publicly about this. But, you know, obviously if there are any transfers that are planned, Congress will get appropriate notification at least 30 days in advance.
Brett, for months I've been pressing the White House on this idea that they wanted to have fewer than 100 detainees remaining at the prison at Guantanamo Bay by the end of the year. And even today, while they refuse to confirm that number, we have learned here at Fox News that Defense Secretary Ash Carter has approved the transfer of at least 17 detainees. And if that happens by year's end, that will leave just 90. Brett?
Kevin Cork live in the North Lawn. Kevin, thank you.
As I emphasized today,
The United States and our partners are not seeking so-called regime change, as it is known, in Syria. What we have said is that we don't believe that Assad himself has the ability to be able to lead the future Syria, but we didn't, we focus today not on our differences about what can or can be done immediately about Assad. We focused on a process, on the political process, whereby Syrians will be making decisions for the future of Syria. But we do believe that nobody should be forced to choose between a dictator and being plagued by terrorists. Our challenge remains creating the conditions on which an alternative can emerge. So while we don't see eye to eye on every single aspect of Syria, we certainly agreed today, and President Putin agreed, that we see Syria fundamentally very similarly. We want the same outcomes. We see the same dangers. We understand the same challenges. And we all believe that a united, non-sectarian Syria represents the future. And we also agree that it is a future without Daesh. And we're committed to try to continue destroy Daesh.
Hey, guys. I'm just like venting my soul anymore. You know, I told you how I quit drinking. It was like a bad week to quit drinking, I'll tell you that. I'm just having so many issues, and I don't go into my business a lot, but one of the ways I make my money, I own some property. In New Mexico, I'm kind of like Donald Trump, but not as rich, but I have this retirement community I get some income from. It's like 200 families, old geezers. Sometimes they bring their grandchildren. It's nice. It's in the desert, but they have a golf course, you know. And I was out there this summer, you know, looking at the property and hiking around the mountains, and I saw this poor little baby rattlesnake dead on the trail. It's this little thing. And I'm like, oh my God, because you have to understand my heart. I'm a Christian. And one of the Bible verses that means the most to me is God loves all creatures, great and small, no matter where they are. I think that's in Psalms or First Illusions, maybe. I don't know, but I love that verse. And we have a duty as Christians to help these poor animals. And so I'm like, what the hell? Why is this happening? And I found out it's because of this climate change. It's getting too cold or too hot or something. They're dying out there. I'm like, what the hell? They're in this vicious environment. And I have this nice property, this retirement community with a golf course, like a little pond they can drink out of. So I'm like, I told my managers, let's bring some of the snakes into the retirement community. Yeah, no big deal. We can all live together. All right. Now, this is what pisses me off, right? I get this email. There's this big ruckus because I guess a couple of the snakes, seriously, it was like five snakes were involved with biting some people. And a couple old geezers, they're probably going to die anyway, but they died and this little kid died. But it was the kid's fault. He aggravated the snake. And you got to understand, these people are like going hysterical. I'm like, it's just five fucking snakes out of 200. That's like about 2.5%. I mean, but they want to blame all the snakes. It's just retarded because there's so much ignorance about snakes, right? Because everyone thinks snakes are these killers, and it's just that stupid prejudice about them. They're not. They mostly just curl up and they rattlesnakes. They just want to lay in the sun peacefully. But you get these idiots that don't respect their culture or how snakes live, and they walk around barefoot or something like that, or dumb kids running around and grab something, and the snake bites them. It's defensive. They don't know any difference. Snakes do not eat people. When they bite you, it's just defensive. So these people are provoking it, probably when it happens, right? They need to be a little bit more culturally aware of these rattlesnakes. But oh no, it's a big, huge to-do about it. And now they want to, because I keep bringing these snakes in because I'm trying to rescue them, and they're like, oh no, and we don't want to have any more snakes in it. I'm like, what? You're trying to ban a whole species on my property? And this is this irrational hatred they have. I'm like, guys, here statistically, if you look at the statistics, more people are bitten by your cute pet dogs than snakes. Little puppies, dogs are more dangerous than snakes, but you're going hysterical about these snakes. It's really sickening. And so I'm like, okay, well, what we'll do is we'll have a procedure. Before we bring the snakes in, I'll have the managers look at it. I'm like, hey, do these snakes look aggressive? Has there been any history that you know of out in the mountains of a snake, one of these snakes biting people? If there isn't, we'll bring them in. Okay, we'll vet them nicely. And I understand there's some bad ones out there in the mountains. So I have my managers. They're going to go out and have rifles, and they're going to shoot the snakes that look bad up in the mountains. Okay, but we can't stop helping these other snakes coming in. It's just really who we are. So anyway, I'm just fighting these ignorant people. I mean, what is this? 2015, almost 2016, and I'm still having to deal with these reptile phobias. God, I hate people like that. Anyway, enough of my rant. Talk to you guys later. Hey, guys, I just got off the phone with my property manager. I thought you'd find this interesting, right? Of the five snakes that bit these people and killed them, and no one advocates what these snakes did, right? But we know, because all the snakes that come into the property that we bring in, we mark them. And two of these had no marks. That's right. They were native homegrown rattlesnakes. And everyone's blaming these snakes we're bringing in, okay? Because they're ignorant.
You by RadioWerewolf.com.